Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Max Grubb, who's serving as our worship associate today, and by guest musicians Stephanie Summers, Saunas Parsons, and Randy and Laura McChrystal.
Moments of transcendence. They can happen anywhere, they can happen anytime, they can happen when you least expect it, and often they sneak up on you and bite you in the buttocks. I could have said another word, but I didn't. And for me, it happened at the Inner Circle Restaurant, Poland, Ohio, 1991. It would be a transcendent moment, a seismic shift, and some would say an aha moment. An instant in time where I experienced an awareness of something that had always been with me. My perspective, my life, would change. You see, for the better part of my life, my early life, childhood and a young adult, I was a survivor, using various tools and behaviors to cope with a dysfunctional family system that followed three rules. Don't talk about it, don't feel, and don't trust. It was a family system that lacked any type of nurturing. There were no words of support or encouragement, no hugs, and the word love was not in my family's vocabulary. And I had come to believe I was worthless and unlovable. I had put up walls to protect myself, to keep people from knowing me, and it kept me from knowing myself. As a young adult, I came to find out that the tools and behaviors I used to survive this family system did not work. And I did not understand why. So, in 1989, at the age of 33, and a series of failed relationships, I sought help and answers, beginning what I did not know at the time would be a lifelong journey of self-discovery. 2 years later, I find myself with a friend, Dale, who is on the same journey, each of us supporting the other at the Inner Circle Restaurant. It was our weekly meeting to have a late evening snack and check in with each other. I remember talking about my abandonment issues and the feelings I had that surrounded them. And Dale, as usual, listened. And then he began a series of comments and questions, which I can still hear now, that started like this. Max, you've often said you believe in a higher power, correct? Why, yes. And then Dale asked, and that higher power has been with you for how long? I said, I believe my higher power has been with me ever since I was born. That I'd had many experiences where I know something was watching over me and taking care of me. Dale went on and asked, that higher power then knows everything about you, all the good and all the bad that you've done, correct? And I said, yes. Then Dale asked, has that power ever abandoned you? And I said, no, never. Then Dale hits me with this. So what does that say about how your higher power feels about you? Here in this restaurant, it hit me hard, for I had not allowed myself to feel or allow anyone, including myself, through the walls I had built around me. And this is where I broke down. Tears, choking up, trying not to cry. For you see, this was the first time in my life that I experienced what it felt like to feel loved. Love for all the good there is about me. Love for all the imperfections there are about me. Accepted for who I am, never abandoned, always there, always watching over me, always with love. It's a feeling that now stays with me. And in the last 23 years, I have learned, and I'm still learning, how to live life and not just survive. My journey of self-discovery continues. And at the darkest times, all I need to do is reflect back at that moment and know that I am loved. And whatever I am dealing with, I am not alone, and it will work out.
The Black Book of Camerthin is primarily a collection of poems dealing with heroes and legends of Great Britain, as well as religious poetry. The book derives its name from the color of its binding and its connection with the Priory of St. John the Evangelist in the community of Camerthin. The book is thought by modern scholars to be the work of a single scribe writing at different periods of his life before and around the year 1250, which makes it one of the earliest surviving manuscripts written solely in the Welsh language. This poem from the Book of Camerthin speaks to the idea of divinity, both immanent and transcendent. Wisdom words for meditation. I am the wind that breathes upon the sea. I am the wave on the ocean. I am the murmur of leaves rustling. I am the rays of the sun. I am the beam of the moon and the stars. I am the power of trees growing. I am the bud breaking into blossom. I am the movement of the salmon swimming. I am the courage of the wild boar fighting. I am the speed of the stag running. I am the strength of the ox pulling the plow. I am the size of the mighty oak, and I am the thoughts of all people who praise my beauty and grace.
Oh my soul, what wondrous love is this? Oh my soul, what wondrous love is this that brings my heart such bliss and takes away the pain of my soul, and takes away sinking down, when I was sinking down, when I was sinking down beneath my sorrow's ground, friends to me gathered round, oh my soul. My soul, friends to be gathered round, oh my soul. To love and to all friends, I will sing. To love and to all friends, I will sing. Thanks unto the end, I will sing, with thanks unto the end, I will sing.
Our reading is an excerpt from the book Thin Places by the minister, journalist, and professor of philosophy and ethics, John Crossley Morgan. Excuse me. I was taking a morning walk down a path outside the Tintern Abbey in Wales when I discovered a rather small but sprawling tree, its branches beckoning to travelers who might rest under its shelter. I crawled under the branches and sat quietly to watch the morning sun break across the ancient abbey sky. It felt safe and even sacred there, a place you might go to rest and reflect on the mystery of life. I sensed the presence of others who had sat in that spot before, Later, over lunch, I spoke with a local resident and told him how I had felt sitting under that tree. He looked at me and said quietly, "It's called a thin place." I had never heard that name before, so he patiently explained that to the Welsh, a thin place is a very special place, a sacred spot, where you feel a presence so deep and mysterious that you have to stretch language to describe it. "That sounds like what inspires poetry," I laughed. "Maybe that's why the Welsh are such good poets," he said. In the months that followed, I became more aware of thin places of my life, in my life, where, whether in the backyard, garden, or by a river, I came to understand that once you feel the power of thin places, you tend to experience them often, in places you might have missed before. More surprisingly, I learned that when you carry a thin place in your mind and heart, you can go there whenever you feel the need. I did so not long ago before I was wheeled into surgery. Scenes from a Welsh countryside before me, rather than the white gowns of nurses and doctors. Now I carry with me the idea of a thin place, where the veil separating this reality from another is temporarily lifted, so faith and imagination can catch a fleeting glimpse.
It's been about a year now that we have been taking a single theme for our monthly worship services and exploring it each week with a different topic. It gives us an opportunity together to go deeper than we were able to do when we had a completely different focus each week. And it also gives me an opportunity to continue to reflect on and refine my message for a few weeks in a row. Last Sunday, I introduced the theme of transcendence by telling you about the transcendentalists and their role in the development of Unitarianism. In explaining how they came to have their name, I offered a very brief description of the theological terms transcendence and immanence. I described immanence as the understanding that divinity is present in the world, as near to us as trees and animals and the beating of our own hearts. Immanence refers to God's presence in the world we know and experience. I described transcendence as the understanding that divinity is beyond the world we know and experience. During the course of the week, Margot Milicic raised a point of difference with me, explaining that in her understanding, transcendence does not necessarily imply separateness beyond connection, but rather the understanding that divinity is unbounded or unlimited. That's a better, more precise definition, I think. Some religious traditions affirm only divine transcendence, others only divine immanence. Still others maintain that divinity is both transcendent and immanent. Most theists in the Unitarian Universalist tradition hold that position. God is within, between, among, and beyond us. But even among those of us not comfortable with God language, there's still room to embrace these concepts as part of a spiritual path. The immanent part is easier, I think. When I ask people what's sacred to them, I usually get a list like family, friends, sometimes pets, often community, the earth in general or specific places upon the earth, and always their own lives, if not all of life. That, we could say, is the immanent dimension of the sacred. But what about the transcendent dimension? Alice McVetty-Vars gave me a book this week that she thought we might enjoy having in our church library. It's called Beyond Religion, Eight Alternative Paths to the Sacred. In this book, the psychologist and former minister David Elkins describes the transcendent dimension of life as the understanding and experience that there is more than what we can see, observe, and define. The specific content of that more varies and could include, among other viewpoints, a belief in a personal God, or faith in the power of community, or the psychological view that the transcendent is an extension of the conscious itself into the regions of the unconscious. whatever the specific content, to affirm a transcendent dimension of life, the author writes, is to see with sacred eyes. Or put another way, it's the ability to see ordinary things in an extraordinary way, to see with the eyes of the heart and the imagination. Elkins contends that this capacity is essential for spiritual health, as it's among the primary antidotes to the plague of cynicism. When we experience a moment of transcendence, he writes, we see that our cynicism is but a defense against wonder, a wall we build around our hearts to protect ourselves from the power of awe. There are religious leaders in most of the world's religious traditions who would agree with that assertion. In some traditions, such a view might only be found in the mystical branches of the faith, but most traditions you can find esteem for transcendent experiences somewhere. Within Christianity, many pathways to transcendence have been charted, including prayer, chanting, walking a labyrinth. We heard earlier of the practice of visiting thin places. The term thin place comes from Celtic Christianity, which was practiced beginning in the 5th century in Ireland and parts of Scotland, Wales, and Northern England. In one of his books, The Heart of Christianity, the religious scholar Marcus Borg explains that the Celtic Christians derived the concept of thin places from their reading of the Bible and their experience of God. Their experience of God was the more, the encompassing spirit in which everything is. He notes that thin places can be actual geographic places, but that the concept extends beyond geography. Thin places are any place in which our hearts are opened. This includes nature, certainly, and for me, that is where I mostly have transcendent experiences. I could tell you very clearly about a particular beach, a particular mountain, several forests in which I have had moments of transcendence, but it's not just in nature. Also the arts, music, dance, poetry, sculpture, painting, and more. Thin places can occur in worship. Indeed, I might even say that that's the point of worship, to create a thin place in which our hearts can be opened to a dimension of life beyond ourselves. Liminal moments are usually thin places. Many who have been present for a birth or a death find themselves moved in ways that are utterly profound. Even people can be thin places in this definition. History is full of stories of prophets and gurus, teachers and wise leaders who radiated a holy presence. Of course, it's important to say that sometimes purported holy ones can turn out to be charlatans or worse. Many have been profoundly harmed as a result of their loyalty to magnetic people with evil intentions. Rather than leading people to life more abundant, self-aggrandizing imposters have led many to places in which they have been abused, broken, and betrayed. That's why it's so important to examine the ethics in any religious or political system. If a leader or a system exploits people's feelings of transcendence by encouraging them to cause harm to themselves or others, that's a good cue that the leader or the system or both are unethical. Within Judaism, the concept of transcendence is tied explicitly to an ethic of care. Rabbi Michael Lerner is a liberal Jew who identifies as part of the religious left. He serves a congregation in San Francisco and has created a magazine called Tikkun, which is dedicated to the healing and transformation of the world. Lerner writes, "Human beings need not be stuck in a world of pain and oppression. We can regain contact with a deeper level of being more consonant with who we really are. Transcendence is not transcending this world, but rather our ability to bring more fully into being in this world aspects of ourselves and aspects of reality that surround us, but to which we have become tone deaf. Much of the pain and oppression we experience in the world is a reflection of the way we do not recognize God in the world, in ourselves, and in each other." For Lerner, the practice of transcendence is about seeing God in all. In another one of his books, he prescribes a spiritual practice to help us do this, and so I'll commend it to you. He suggests the next time you're at work or at a party, that you take a moment to endeavor to see divinity in the face of each and every person in the room. He suggests that most of us will encounter internal resistance when we try to do this, but suggests that if we practice and endeavor to face our resistance, in time we will indeed come to see that divinity is present in each and every person. And if we really believed that, then how would we live? There are some people who want to claim that at their core, all of the world's religions are essentially the same. I don't think that that's true. The religions of the world are incredibly diverse, and each reflects its own cultural context. Because I am not intimately acquainted with the cultural context of the East, it's harder for me to be an interpreter of Eastern religions. However, from what I understand, it seems clear that there's a concept of transcendence in many of them. In Hinduism, the understanding of the ultimate is both immanent and transcendent. Though there are many, many, many gods in the Hindu pantheon, they're all understood as manifestations of the one supreme God, the principle of Brahman, which is the absolute, ultimate truth, the formless and the form, the unity of all reality. One of the most well-known poets of transcendent experience in recent Hindu history is the poet Rabindranath Tagore. Tagore was the first Hindu to win the Nobel Prize for Literature, and he's widely regarded as a spiritual treasure in India. Swami Adiswarananda of the Vivekananda Center in New York described Tagore as a poet and a mystic who takes us on a spiritual quest and gives us a glimpse of the infinite in the midst of the finite. Unity at the heart of all diversity, and the divine in all beings and things of the universe. We can hear that clearly in Tagore's own words. Here's a piece of a poem. I feel that all the stars shine in me. The world breaks into my life like a flood. The flowers blossom in my body, and the youthfulness of land and water smokes like an incense in my heart. The breath of all things plays on my thoughts as like a flute. While enlightenment is the ultimate spiritual goal of Hinduism, most Hindus believe that an individual will live many cycles of birth, death, and rebirth before achieving enlightenment and being freed from the process of reincarnation. Buddhism espouses a slightly different view. While most Buddhists also believe in reincarnation, many Buddhists affirm that enlightenment is available to the serious practitioner in this life. Buddhism teaches that life is suffering, and that the source of our suffering is caused by our cravings or attachments. Buddhism also teaches that true happiness and freedom are possible, and that the way to end suffering and enter freedom is to be devoted to the Eightfold Path. That path prescribes moral living, developing awareness and practicing in meditation as the pathway to enlightenment and liberation. An essential component of meditation is learning how to and then practicing the release of attachments. For those who would experience transcendence, Buddhist or not, meditation is a wonderful practice because all of us are plagued by attachments. We're attached to our thoughts, to a certain image of ourselves, to our sense that we know how things ought to be. There are many, many forms of narrow thought and self-centeredness we do well to practice transcending. That was the experience of one of the best-known 18th century universalist mystics, George de Benneville. De Benneville was born into aristocracy and raised by his godmother, Queen Anne of England. He had everything he could want in life. When he was 12, he was sent to learn navigation, and he had his first mystical experience docked in Algiers aboard the ship. A group of Moors came aboard to sell refreshments to the sailors. One of the Moors became injured on the ship and had a bleeding wound in his leg. The other Moors that were with him stopped their efforts to sell and went over to tend their friend. crying into his wound and saying that the salt was a good remedy and offering blessings for healing. De Benneville was so touched by this experience. It was his first glimpse into his awareness of himself as overly exalted, his first sense that he had an arrogant sense of himself, because prior to this experience, he thought himself superior to the Moors. But he felt that in their witness to their wounded friend, that they had expressed true Christianity, whereas he had considered them, prior to this experience, to be heathens. That was the first experience, but it wasn't enough to change his life forever. De Benneville continued to have visions, each of which convinced him more and more that he was a sinner. And so he became deeply depressed. And the court ministers came to him day after day for over a year to try to convince him that owing to his station and rank in life, he should be exalted. It was right for him to have a lofty view of himself. But in his heart, De Benneville didn't believe that that was true. He had another vision. This one, he saw himself so profoundly broken as a person. And in that vision, he also heard the voice of God telling him that he was forgiven, telling him that he was worthy, telling him that he was loved. From this, De Benneville concluded that that experience he had was not just for himself, but for all people, and he became convinced of universal salvation. From this experience, he decided to become a preacher of universalism and eventually came to this country, where he spread the universalist gospel in Pennsylvania and the surrounding area. This little tour through expressions of transcendence and a few religious traditions wouldn't be complete without a few words about humanism. In their catalog of character, strengths, and virtue, psychologists Christopher Peterson and Martin Seligman include transcendence as a virtue. They define it separately from religion and from spirituality as the sense that there's meaning and purpose in life larger than ourselves. As they define it, transcendence is anyone or anything that inspires in us awe or hope or gratitude, anything that makes our everyday concerns seem trifling and the self seem small. I think we all need that reawakening from time to time. Too much in our society promotes self-absorption. Even if we try to inoculate ourselves from the siren song of consumerism, there are also the incredible demands that keep us preoccupied with our work, our plans, our busyness. Experiences of transcendence help us remember that our true place is as a tiny moment in the vastness of time and space. Sometimes those experiences are so profound that they change us forever. More often, though, they're fleeting moments of insight which shine with clarity for a time and then fade as we resume the daily round. That's why we would do well to take time for regularly opening our hearts to the experience of transcendence. There are many ways to do that. Spiritual practice can lead us there. So can just about any good, healthy endeavor which can absorb us, transport us, and help us connect with more. One other exchange I had this week was with Jean Weninger, who observed that ideally, transcendence and transformation are linked. I think that's right. At least, I think that that's what we're about here. The mission of the congregation is to help people live caring lives of meaning and purpose. Experiences of transcendence can help us keep transforming into the very best selves we can be. By remembering who we really are and how profoundly we're connected, we'll be reminded of our calling to do everything in our power to be a blessing upon this world. May it be so, and amen. We have gathered in dedication to the proposition that beneath all of our diversity, there lies a unity which binds us one to the other, to the earth, and to the stars. We've gathered in witness. Let us take our witness out into the world. Go in peace.